We're almost done with the book of Vayikra. Let's make a party. How many years did it take us? 10? Okay, page 720. We're in middle of the halachas over here. If a person sanctifies, well, he says, my value is given over to the Beis HaMikdash, depending on the age, gender, that's how much he has to give. Then if a person would sanctify his field to the Beis HaMikdash, so the Kohen would have to evaluate the value of the field. And then, it has to be 50 kesef, like we learned, for a base kord, for like 75,000 square amis, the place of redemption would be 50 shekel kesef. So remember last time we discussed that when Avraham Avinu bought Maris and Machpelah for 400 shekel, it was 4 times 50, 4 times 75,000 is 600,000 square amas that Avraham Avinu bought one square amma per Jew in Israel, and based on how many years left to Yovel, there were 50, in other words, like this. The last thing we're learning, if you consecrate a field, which is a base cord, which is 75,000 square amas, it only goes until the Yovel year, because Yovel, everything goes back to the original owner. So it's 50 shekel kesef for the year for 50 years. So it's basically, if it's redeemed, after 3 years, you deduct 3 shekels, because it's 50 years, 50 shekels, 1 shekel per year. And then you figure it out. So that's, now we're up to a new din. Okay? Pasuk Chav Beis. Pasuk 22 on 720. Okay, now it says like this. V'im ish estei meknasei. If a person, well, until now we learned, if a person sanctifies a field that he inherited from the family. Now the Torah says, what happens if somebody acquired a field? Ashalem is de'achuzasei, which is not from his family field, not something which was inherited, and Yagdish LaHashem, he person sanctified that to Hashem. Okay? Now, V'chishiv le'akoyin, then the Kohen has to reckon for him, Eis michzes or erkecha, the sum of the valuation until the Jubilee year, V'nosin es erkecha b'yemahu, he gives it on that day, the price to the Beis HaMikdash, Kedesh LaHashem, it's holy to Hashem. Meaning like this. If in Eretz Yisrael we learned before, when you buy a field, it's only yours until the Yovel. We also learned the law before that you cannot sanctify something that doesn't belong to you. I can't come, as we learned last week, I can't come and say, okay, your field is holy to the Beis HaMikdash. It's not mine to do it. Therefore, we learned a thief cannot sanctify a field that he steals because it's not really his, it's the original owner. If I buy a field from you, it's not a permanent sale in Israel. I mean, not nowadays, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when the law of Yovel applied. When you buy a field, you're only buying it until Yovel. So it's basically not that you own the field, you own the rights until Yovel. Okay? So if I buy a field from you, and I sanctify it, I can only sanctify it until Yovel. Because after Yovel, it's not mine anymore. I only bought the usage of the field until the Yovel year. That I could sanctify. But I can't sanctify the field because the field doesn't belong to me. Because in the year of Yovel, it goes back to the original owner. So here the Pasuk is saying, what happens if somebody buys a field, then sanctifies the field? So the Kohen has to evaluate the value of the field until the Yovel year. And that's how much money you have to give to the Beis HaMikdash. But more than that, it can't be. Now, the question over here is, how does the Kohen figure? So there's an argument here between Rashi and Rambam. Rashi learns that the way the Kohen reckons the field is according to the evaluation of 50 shekels per field. The Rambam learns, no. There's nothing to do with that. That's only by an inherited field. By a field you buy, the Kohen evaluates it on the value of the field. By an inherited field, Torah gave a blanket rule. 50 shekel for 75,000 square amma. It doesn't matter if it's worth more, less, 50. It's like same price for everything. The question is, Rashi learns that applies here also. That if you buy a field and you sanctify the field, you're sanctifying it only until the Yovel year. How much is the valuation of the Kohen? How much is left to Yovel? Shekel per year? That's how much you have to donate to the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam learns, no, that this is a regular field, has nothing to do with this 50 shekel kesef. If the field is worth 100 shekels until Yovel, so it's 2 shekels per year, not 1 shekel per year. If it's worth less, it's a half a shekel per year. But there is no, the Rambam holds it over here, has nothing to do with 50 shekel per Yovel season, it's what the value of the field is. And the truth is, there's two opinions in the Gemara. Rashi follows one opinion, Rabbi Eliezer, and the Rambam follows the Chachamim's opinion. This is the argument. Then the Torah says like this, B'shnasa Yovel, what happens in the year of Yovel, because this is a bought field, so you only own it until Yovel, Yoshev Asada L'asher Kano Me'itei, the field goes back to the one you bought it from, L'asher Lei Achuzas Ha'aretz, who has the heritage of the land. Because we said, in Eretz Yisrael, there is no such thing as permanent buying of a field. It always goes back to the original owner during the Yovel year. So this field, because it's bought, you bought it, you can sanctify it only until the Yovel year. We need to figure out how much money that is. And the field, when it comes Yovel, goes back to the original owner. And he says like this, B'chol erkecha, now the Torah defined how much is a shekel. B'chol erkecha, yia b'shekel ha-kodesh, should be a shekel, or the holy shekel, esrim geira yia shekel. A shekel is 20 geira. Rashi says that later on, they increased it to 24 geira at a shekel. Okay? Now, just to get an approximate how much a shekel is, here, a shekel of Torah is 13.33 grams of silver. In the second Beis HaMikdash, it was added to 24 geira. But it was, a shekel was like 13.33 grams of silver. Well, 0.43 troy ounces, yeah. So after they made it bigger, it's like a half an ounce, is one shekel.
Why did it have
a big? Why? Because, to make it more valuable for the Beis HaMikdash. Inflation, yeah. We said the Hekdash always gets the upper hand anyway, no matter what happens. They always win. But if you make a cheshbon, we said, yeah, five shekel today, 5 shekel is 101 grams of silver. So do we have to redeem a firstborn? If they give a coin 5 shekels? 5 shekels is 101 grams of silver. That's more than what they're saying here. 13.33 was only if it's 20 geta. So this was added by a fifth. So it's a fifth more. So it's like, yeah, it's like 20 grams per shekel. Now,
more expensive than gold.
No. What? Silver?
Silver, but had more value, perhaps.
Only because it was more of a currency. But they make a cheshbon, kikar. It's interesting, when it came to build the menorah, here, kikar, one kikar, the menorah was gold, okay, not silver, but it was gold. One kikar was 2,400 ounces. The menorah weighed 2,400 ounces. Okay, divided by 16, whatever, okay.
How many pounds?
Okay, it's 2,400 divided by 16. So you think that the 2 into 24 is 1.
I think we figured out that they require 50 pounds or kilo.
150 pounds approximately. Yeah? But you can imagine in the Megillah, I know it's Hanukkah season, but in the Megillah, Haman offered Ahasuerus 10,000 kikar to destroy the Jews. Said Vaseres Alofim Kikar Kesef. Haman offered Ahasuerus 10,000 kikar. One kikar is 150 pounds of silver.
Silver or gold?
No, it depends. Whatever it is, I mean, huh? A kikar is 3,000 shekels.
How many kikar?
10,000. He offered him, and Ahasuerus said, "Nah, it's okay. Keep the money. I don't need it." $150 pounds of gold? Yeah. No wonder the Vatican's not giving it back. First of all, Mashiach, the menorah will be a minor problem. Okay. Okay. 720. 720. Okay, all the way to the bottom of the page. We just learned Pasuk 25, we just learned. Okay, so all the measurements of in a shekel should be 20 geta shekel. Okay, so you basically figure that a shekel is like 1 ounce, approximately, of silver. But then he says like this. Now start a new din. Until now we learned you consecrated a person by saying my value is given to the Beis HaMikdash. You could have done that with your animal, with your field, no matter what it is. But there's a certain animal, excuse me, which is holy from birth. And that's a firstborn animal. Bechor. Right? So it says like this. Ach bechor, but a firstborn animal. Asher yuvukar l'Hashem, which will become a firstling for Hashem. B'veim lo yaktish ish oisei, you cannot sanctify it. Im shur, im seh, if whether it's an ox or a sheep, it doesn't matter. L'Hashem hu, it's automatically to Hashem. So the question is, if it's holy, what do you mean you can't consecrate it? First things, you can't make it holy, it's holy. What it means is like this. You can't make it a different korban. And generally speaking, what the Torah is teaching us is like this. Once an animal is, let's say, a shlamim, a peace offering, you cannot make it a burnt offering. If it's a burnt offering, you cannot make it a shlamim. Once it is what it is. You can't change the status of a korban. Now, there's a din we read in Chumash, in Siddur every day. What's the din of a bechor, the firstborn animal? So we read in Ezel Mekayim, and the Mishnah says, HaBechor v'amaisa v'apesach, Bechor, firstborn animal, okay, is the least holy of sacrifices. The bechor is eaten by kayanim, you can eat it, whatever, you know, it's... Now, what happens if somebody has a firstborn bechor, so the meat is eaten by the kayanim? The guy says, no, you know what, I want to make this an ola. I want to make this a burnt offering, which is completely burnt on the mizbeach. The Torah says you can't do it, because it's not yours anymore. Once the animal is born, a firstborn, it's automatically God, automatically Hashem's. Once it's Hashem's, how can you change the status of what the sacrifice is? You can't change it. It is what it is.
I don't know about life on a farm, but how do you know a firstborn, who's a firstborn?
The farmers had to know. In fact, according to the Gemara in Erchin, it's for not only it doesn't work if you say it's a different carbon. The Torah is saying, "Give it here, lo yakdish." You're not allowed to sanctify. You're not allowed to change its status. And just by trying to change its status, you're automatically transgressing a negative commandment. Farmers in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, by the way, even today in Israel, religious farmers, this law of Bechor, firstborn animal, still applies today. It belongs to God. So what happens when a religious farmer has a firstborn kosher animal, not treif animals, kosher animal? They have to let it graze until it develops a blemish. It develops a blemish, it's not fit anymore as a sacrifice, and then it loses the status of holiness. So according to Halacha, a farmer had to know any time the animal gave birth or didn't give birth, if it was the firstborn or not a firstborn.
So in Israel, they cannot redeem the value of the thing?
Not today, because it has to be sanctified. It has to be brought as a carbon. A firstborn person, the Torah says, give the kohen $5, five shekels, he get it back. Here, it has an obligation to be brought as a carbon. What they sometimes do, they're really not supposed to do, they have two alternatives. One is they put it in a very narrow pen, full of barbed wire, that the animal should not scratch itself, that's not enough, but eventually create a blemish. Or what some people do, which is another big controversy in Halacha, before the animal is about to give birth to its firstborn, they sell it to a goy. And then it's born in the guy's domain. So then it doesn't have the status of a bechor, because it's owned by a guy. A guy doesn't matter. Then they buy it back. They come it, you know that. But not everybody likes that. In Halacha, I'm saying, not everybody relies on that. Yeah. But what the Torah is saying over here, that if it's a firstborn animal, because it's automatically holy, you're not allowed to do anything with it. You can't consecrate it for a different carbon. Or, like the Ramban explains over here, it means normally a sacrifice has to be consecrated. You have to make it holy before you bring it as a carbon. Here you don't have to because it's automatically holy. It's born holy. Now, what happens in Behema Tmeya? What happens if it's a non-kosher animal? Now, obviously, this is not speaking about a firstborn, because there's no firstborn non-kosher animal except a donkey. And the donkey, the Torah says, redeem it for a sheep, and if you don't redeem it, you have to chop off its neck. But every other non-kosher animal, there's no law of a firstborn in it. So the Torah says here, the law of a firstborn. Then the Torah says, what happens if it's a non-kosher animal? So obviously the Mefarshim explained, it cannot be speaking about a firstborn, because there is no such thing as a firstborn non-kosher animal. So speaking about non-kosher animal that a guy consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash. Now again, as a korban, it cannot be brought because it's a non-kosher animal. So obviously he's donating its value to the Beis HaMikdash, because they can't use a pig in the Beis HaMikdash. What are they going to do with it? Or a camel? So the male value has to be brought. So the Torah says, in Behemah Tmeya, if it's a non-kosher animal that you're donating to the Beis HaMikdash, Ufada Be'erkecha, and you want to redeem it according to the assessment, V'yosav Chamish Yosei Olav, you need to add another fifth. That means, like we learned before, if the owner who consecrated it donates it to the Beis HaMikdash, and then he wants to redeem it, he has to pay an additional fifth, which we learned means a quarter. But if somebody else redeems it, they just pay the value of the animal. So if a person himself donates an animal to the Beis HaMikdash, non-kosher animal, it goes to the, it's called Bedek HaBayis, it goes to the treasury. They don't need it, they sell the animal. If they sell it to the other, another person, it's a $100 animal, the person gives $100, the animal is not consecrated anymore, it's not it becomes unholy. If a guy himself did it, he has to pay $125 for it, if he wants to redeem it. V'imlo yigoyel, what happens if the owner himself doesn't redeem it? V'nimka barakacha, then it's sold for the original legitimate market value of the animal. Now he says like this. Until now, the Torah was talking about a person donating values of objects to the Beis HaMikdash. Cherem, what we're learning about now, any segregated property, okay? Segregated property over here, the Mefarshim explains like this. He consecrates the object, not the value of the object. Until now, we're learning that either it's desecrated, it's consecrated as a sacrifice, then the animal itself becomes holy, the animal itself has to be brought as a carbon. Otherwise, you're donating the value to the Beis HaMikdash, and only the value. But there's something called cheirem. Somebody, when you say somebody is in cheirem, that means you excommunicated them, you banned them. That's what it means. But in these terms, it refers to it's banned from human enjoyment. It's banned from human enjoyment. Meaning, it's the object which he is consecrating. And he says like this, there's Bedek HaBayis, and the other one is the Cheirem for Kohanim. There's two types of Cheirem. Again, Cheirem here is a positive thing, not a negative thing. Cheirem means you ban something. So normally you ban a person from the community. Here, you're banning the animal or the object from your personal use. Now you can say Cheirem l'Hashem, or Cheirem l'Kohanim. Cheirem l'Hashem means it goes to the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash. And then the owner could redeem it, somebody else could redeem it. There's something that's called Cheirem for the Kohanim, meaning it totally belongs to the Kohen. It's like Truma. When I have a field, I give Truma to the Kohen. It's the Kohen's, it's not mine anymore. Therefore, the halacha is, I cannot redeem it anymore. It's not mine to redeem. It is the Kohen's. If the Kohen wants to keep it, he has to buy it back from the temple. But the owner has no right anymore to redeem it. So in other words, sometimes when I consecrate an object to the Beis HaMikdash, if I don't use the word Cheirem, it means I'm not donating the object, I'm donating the value of the object to the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, the owner could redeem it if he plays an extra quarter, or somebody else could redeem it. If you use the word Cheirem and it goes to the Kohanim, the owner cannot redeem it anymore. Completely the Kohen. But if the Kohen wants to keep it, he has to pay the Beis HaMikdash the value for it. But the owner cannot redeem it anymore. If he wants to get back the field, he can't do it. If he wants to get back the animal, he can't do it. It's too late. Okay, the property itself becomes control of the owner, and therefore it's completely the Kohanim. Okay, so it says like this. Ach, by Pasuk Chavches. Ach kocherem asher yachrim, any segregation, so to speak, that a person will do it, ish l'Hashem, he'll give it over to Hashem, mikol asher lo, from anything that he owns, whether it's person, meaning a slave, animals, misdei achuzasei, from his fields that he inherited from his ancestors, lo yimacher v'lo yigoel. They cannot be sold, and they cannot be redeemed. Nothing can happen to them. What happens? Kedesh kadoshim hu l'Hashem. It is completely holy to Hashem. Now it says like this. Kol cherem asher yocher min ha'adam. Any condemned person who has been burnt, I'll explain this in a second, which is banned from mankind, lo yipada, he cannot be redeemed, mos yumos. I'll explain what this pasuk means. But before we go to this pasuk, I didn't finish really the other pasuk. The other pasuk says like this, what happens if somebody says, this field, cherem la kohen, it belongs to the kohen. So once it belongs to the kohen, I have no connection to it anymore. I cannot redeem it. I cannot buy it. Nothing. What happens if I just say, Chedem LaHashem? What does that mean? So, in the Gemara again, there's two opinions. One opinion says, Stam Chedem goes to the Kohanim. It cannot be redeemed. Another opinion says, if you just say the word Chedem, you don't say LaHashem or to the Kohen, then it's for God, and you could redeem it. Only the cherem that belonged to the Kohanim is not allowed to be redeemed. And the logic behind this, Bechlal, whatever, but basically, it means once it's consecrated completely, it cannot be redeemed. It's completely Hashem's. It's like, I give a kohen truma, I cannot buy back the truma from the kohen. It's his. You give the field, it belongs to the kohen. Meaning, you lose your ownership over it. And this we discussed last week. There is a big halachic discussion. What is the definition of ownership? When you own something, what does that mean? Basically, it means that you have the usage of the object. If you don't have the usage of the object, it's not yours. If you think about it, what is the legal definition of ownership?
You have control.
Yeah, but what does control mean? Control means that you can use it. Yeah, that's usage. If I stand in front of the light, okay, and I control the light switch, that doesn't mean I own it, because I can't use it. It's a different word, control. The definition of ownership is that you have the usage. Something, therefore, we learned, something that you're not allowed to use, is not yours.
You're not allowed to use, it's not yours.
Right. Like we said.
That's very deep meaning.
Let me ask you a very simple question. Chametz and Pesach, you're not allowed to benefit. Correct?
Right.
So let's say you have a loaf of bread in your house and Pesach. Okay? In secular law, it might be yours. Okay? But Torah says, you cannot benefit from that chametz and Pesach. What happens if somebody comes and destroys that loaf of bread? Do they have to pay you?
No.
Why don't you have ownership?
Cannot use it.
So what's the definition of ownership? Usage. Because the Torah says you can't use chametz, right? Meat and milk. which is cooked together, you cannot benefit from. That means it's not yours. What do you mean it's not yours? It's in my house. Okay? Halachically, usage makes it yours. If you can't use it, it's not yours. So if somebody would damage it, he doesn't have to pay.
Somebody that damages it?
Yeah. In fact, the Gemara says an interesting rule. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar says, two things are not yours. Two things don't belong to you. But the Torah makes it yours for one reason only. That you're liable for it. Huh? What are the two things? You dig a pit in the street. The Torah says, in Parshas Mishpatim, if a man digs a pit and an animal falls into the pit, you have to pay damages. Right? The question is, my pit? I walked outside in the street. Yeah. I went on Wilshire Boulevard, make a big hole in the ground. Yeah. And an animal falls in. It's my pit. I don't own it. Torah says, yes, you don't own it. But the Torah says, we're making it yours for liability. The second thing the Gemara says is Chametz on Pesach. Chametz on Pesach you don't own, because you can't benefit from it. So a guy could come along and say, why do I get a sin for owning Chametz on Pesach? The Torah says you're not allowed to own Chametz on Pesach. But I don't own it. How could I be obligated for owning Chametz on Pesach if I don't own it? So Gemara says, you're right, but the Torah makes it yours only for the liability. But if somebody would take it, burn it, ruin it, they're not liable to pay.
So it also works, I'm just trying to relate the other way around, like the benefit of something that you get, it automatically makes it that it's yours.
Right? Something what?
The benefit of something you get, it makes that automatically yours. The other way around. So like for
that's instance, the definition of ownership.
Like for instance, the example we use that you donate this, and the person passes away, and then still that donation is due by him to give. Is that like by saying that you're getting benefits of the whatever of the donation that you get, the mitzvah?
No, it's a financial requirement.
So it's not like you get the benefits of the mitzvah and there's still, you still have the ownership of that and you still have to pay ownership of that benefit.
Who are you paying ownership to?
The benefit.
No, for instance, let me give you another example. You have to give truma to a kohen. The first fruits you have to give to the kohen. When I separate truma, okay, two things happen. This truma, I have to give to a kohen to eat. I'm not allowed to eat it. It's capital punishment if you eat it from heaven. And now I can eat the rest of my grain. Because until I separated the tithes and the truma and everything that I had to separate, I'm not allowed to eat from the grain. Okay? Now, I separate truma. It belongs to a kohen. Correct?
Right.
Which kohen?
Any kohen.
Any kohen that I have the choice to give it to. It's not mine. It's the kohen's. I'm not allowed to eat it. I can't benefit from it. But the Torah says, I have in Hebrew it's called Toves Hanah, I have the benefit to give it to the kohen of my choice. Okay? Let's say the truma is worth $100. I have a big field. The truma is worth $100. Okay? I could give this truma to any kohen of my choice. What happens if a kohen comes on his own and grabs it? Now, is it mine? No. I can't use it. It belongs to a kohen. The question is, can he keep it? The din is he can keep it. The argument in the Gemara is, if the kohen has to pay me money which is worth the benefit to give it to the kohen of my choice. In other words, and there's an argument, the Gemara, is that called money? Or is that not called money? The fact that I have the right to give it to the kohen of my choice, is there a tangible money to that or not?
The benefit.
Right.
So like if somebody steals your mitzvah, yeah, he has to pay?
There's also sometimes the Gemara says if you steal a mitzvah from somebody, you have to pay him.
Because you can't put a value on a mitzvah.
No, but they put in aloch, there's a value, I forgot what it is, liter, I think, a certain amount of gold. But I'm saying something else. If a kohen grabs the truma, he's not a nice guy, because I have the right to give it to the guy who I want. But legally, it's not mine.
And he knows it.
And he knows it. So he can come and grab it. The question in the Gemara, does he have to pay me, let's say, a dollar, which is the value of the benefit that I have to give it to the kohen of my choice. So for the kohen, it's worth it. He gets $100 truma, maybe for a dollar. It's worth it. Huh? I think Tevet Sanoa is not money. Which means he can get it without even paying.
Right. So what's the difference between Kerem and Neder and Nedava?
When I consecrate something to the Beis HaMikdash, I'm giving its value, not the object.
So that's Neder?
Yeah.
And Nedava?
No.
I mean Kerem?
Kerem is... because I use the word chedem, meaning I'm giving up my right to the object, it belongs totally to the kohen. The first case is I'm only giving the value of the object.
Unless
if it's an animal which is fit and kosher to be a sacrifice, and I say this animal is holy, that animal has to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash.
That's
Neder. Right. But if I give a trefa animal, or a table, a chair that you can't bring on the Mizbeach, what am I actually donating?
Value.
The value of the object. Now the Torah says, what's the value of the object? Sometimes it's 50 shekel for 50 years in a field. Sometimes male gender, female gender, this age, that age. Sometimes market value. But therefore, by all those cases, I could redeem it. Yes, the Torah says, if the owner redeems it, he needs to pay an extra fifth, which means a quarter. Okay? But once I say, I'm giving up my right to the object, then I can't redeem it anymore. It's not mine.
So it's like an operating word. Once I say, I hereby cherem.
You better believe it. The words, when you donate something to the Beis HaMikdash, one letter could change the fact from one extreme to the next. Like zoo, or, you know, this animal, a animal, cherem, hekdish, depends what you're doing.
An attorney.
The Beis HaMikdash have their attorneys. I mean. Okay, now the Pasuk says like this in Pasuk Chav Tes 29. This is a very strange Pasuk. Any condemned person who has been banned from mankind shall not be redeemed. What's the case over here? It refers to this. Rashi brings down from the Gemara what it means is as follows. A person was sentenced to death. Guy committed capital punishment. Beis Din sentenced the guy to death. But he's still alive. He didn't die yet. Okay? And the guy says, I donate his value to the Beis HaMikdash. Torah says he's not redeemable because he's dead already. Once he's condemned to death, he's dead. That's what the Torah says. Kol chedem, any condemned person, asher yachra min ha'odom, that's been banned from mankind because he was condemned to death, lo yipada, he cannot be redeemed. Why can he not be redeemed? Because Meisumas, he's already considered dead. Huh? Or, that's the way Rashi learns. The Ramban learns, it means the king of Sanhedrin, that, here, Rashi learns it means capital punishment. But Ramban learns a little bit different. A king, or the Sanhedrin, has a right to demand from certain people to do certain things. For the common cause. If they don't listen, the king could put him to death. Even if it's not a sin of capital punishment. Okay? A king has a right to say, you either do this or I'll kill you. If the guy didn't do it, and he's again going to get killed, and the guy wants to redeem him, he's redeemless. He's dead. Like Rashi says, since he'll be put to death, he has no monetary value.
Like that missing husband story, he said the rabbi said that he's supposed to be dead, so the guy dropped dead.
No, he permitted the native beauty permitted her to remarry.
And then the husband showed up.
Yeah. No, what the Pasuk here is saying, an interesting thing. By the way, I just want to say, Derech Agav, like to say, in Torah law, there's no such thing as death row. In America, from the time they can condemn you to death until you get killed, it can take about 30 years. Yeah? With the appeals and automatic appeals and the governor and this guy and that guy, it can take 30 years. In Torah law, the same day they proclaim the death sentence, he has to get killed.
Day.
The same day. Therefore, Beis Din, when it came to death sentences, would proclaim the sentence in the morning. They're up all night figuring out the sentence. That morning, whenever they came to the conclusion, gave him death sentence, that day he had to be killed. Because today you don't have death penalty stopped in the middle of the second Beis HaMikdash already in Torah law. Beis Din already, once it started, the 10 golos, the 10 exiles, they didn't have the ability halachically to give the death sentence. There's a whole question in contemporary halacha. What is the Jewish view on capital punishment in the secular system today? Is it, it's a whole discussion in halacha. If it's what Torah says, what Torah doesn't say, but it's a whole different story. But Beis Din stopped killing people already in the middle of the second Beis HaMikdash.
So according to the Torah, if some Palestinian go and does da-da-da-da-da,
in Torah law, there's no capital punishment today.
Rabbi, how about to Eichmann? What Israel did to Eichmann? He executed him.
Yeah.
That was the secular court.
Right, but how about according to halacha? Was that allowed?
Again, that's what I'm saying. It, it's not the question of what does Torah law about say about contemporary law. But there was a secular court system in Israel, wasn't it, Beis Din?
Right.
Still a secular court. Still, they don't.
The Beis Din, not the Beis. The court system in Israel, not the Rabbanut, not the Beis, is a secular system.
Yeah.
a bunch of Jews, but it's a secular system. It's based on English rule. It's not based on Torah law.
They have, Rabbi, in Israel right now, when they have like secular law, they also have like rabbis. Or
it depends. If you go to Beit Din, you go to secular court.
There's no mix.
No.
Just
no. But there's no death row in Yiddishkeit, because the Torah says that's torture for the person.
Right.
Torah says he has to get killed, kill him right away. Generally speaking, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, any Bezdin that killed somebody once in 7 years was called a killing Bezdin. They really killed somebody in the Bezdin, even when they did do capital punishment. One opinion in the Mishnah says once in 70 years. But the Halacha is a Bezdin that killed somebody once in 7 years was called a killing Bezdin. They didn't like to kill people. There's no choice, but as a rule, they didn't do it. So, there was no such thing as, you know, death row where a guy sitting there for 30 years or just...
In halacha, it's something on the side. Can a person have a will if this happens to them, if they become a vegetable, should they pull the life plug off of them?
What's that to do with it?
I don't know, it's like a death sentence on themselves. Are they allowed to do that? So that's not permissible.
The person himself is talking about, right?
No, the person himself is doing a will and doing all these legal
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, but somebody has to do it and still not allowed.
No, but he's saying himself.
According to Torah law, we do not own ourselves. You know, especially in the women's world, it's my body, I could do it, abortion, not abortion, my body, I could do with it whatever I want, and ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. A person does not belong to ourselves, we belong to God. And therefore, even medical things.
But this contradicts what you said, because you exactly was thinking about that. Okay, so it's my body, how do I know I own it? Is I have the right to use it. So if I have
If I borrow this book from you, can I use it?
You borrow it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Therefore, can I destroy it?
No, I still don't.
But I can use it. Because I'm borrowing from you the usage, not the ability to destroy it. God lent us our bodies and our soul. God said, I want it back in the same condition, a lot older, obviously, than I gave it to you. But a person cannot mutilate their body, they cannot damage their body, they can definitely not kill themselves. So the usage is the temporary ownership for 120 years, but then we have to give it back. So he can't destroy it.
So what should a doctor do then? If
you're getting too complicated.
If a person's will says if they become a vegetable and they're just basically on brain function, pull the plug. A Jewish Orthodox, rabbinically oriented doctor.
They have a big, thank you. They have a big problem.
They can add to it. That's
halachically, they shouldn't do it.
The halacha said even the noise surgery is not allowed. The beauty.
No, don't say it's not allowed. It's questionable. Cosmetic surgery is questionable because you're hurting yourself.
No, beauty.
I said cosmetic. But sometimes it's allowed. Depends what the story is. It's not a blanket yes. It's not a blanket no either. It's like, depends why the person's doing it. The God forbid a person was in an accident. They became deformed.
No, they have to be.
So why do they have to?
Because it's deformed.
So let them be deformed. The answer is, psychologically, it can cause them to become suicidal. They're not going to be able to find the shidduch. They're not going to be able to get married. They're not going to be able to do this. So that also has to be taken into consideration. You know? If somebody thinks they have an ugly nose, and because of that they can't get married, and that can cause them mental, psychological
mental anguish.
Anguish that will cause him maybe to commit suicide. It's a different story. Anyway, we got off a little bit. not really, but... So the Torah says, once the Beis Din proclaims you death sentence, you have no value anymore. What's interesting, though, because now the question would be like this. There's a halacha, the Mishnah says, what happens if somebody's being taken out for capital punishment? And somebody comes running and says, no, I have a merit for the guy. The Beis Din goes back to court and starts the whole thing all over again. What happens if Beis Din proclaims somebody innocent, and then somebody comes screaming, no, I could prove him guilty? It's too late. But the opposite way, that if Beis Din says the guy's guilty, and they're going mamish to the gallows, or wherever they're going, and they're about to kill him, and the guy says, I have a merit, they go back and start all over again. So now the question is, what happens if a guy was proclaimed dead, death sentence, and they're taking him out, and the guy says, I'm giving this value to the Beis HaMikdash. No. And then somebody comes and says, I have a merit for the guy. And then they go back, and they find him innocent. Then you would have to pay. Because the death sentence was a mistake. And he's really innocent.
But the guy who originally said, I want to
redeem him. Right.
The words came out of his mouth, now he has to.
Now if they found him innocent, then he has to pay for it. Because then he was never... The death sentence was a mistake.
So if there was never a death sentence, can someone redeem the person who was supposed to die before the sentence from the bed team?
Before the sentence, yeah.
So that
not that he redeems, he still gets killed.
Oh, okay.
No, you can't, no.
Person for a certain value.
The Torah says that in Mishpatim, that once a guy is supposed to get killed, you can't buy his life back.
Before the din is even made by the Beit Din. So before the Beit Din says...
Yeah, but then what are you buying?
You're buying his value, so if the Beit Din says he was supposed to die, he was redeemed already by a certain value.
No, but redeemed, that money has to go to the Beis Hamikdash, the guy still gets killed. The redemption is not to get the guy off the hook. He's still going to get killed. The question is, did this guy make a vow that he's obligated to give to the Beis HaMikdash or not?
So you can't bail him out.
No, you can't bail out. In Torah law, there's like this. There's no jail sentence. There is no jail term as a punishment. You find many times jail terms, but not as a sentence of a punishment. Okay? Capital punishment needed a Beis Din of 23 of the size of the court. Of that 23, the majority has to be at least 2. That means if 12 said guilty and 11 said innocent,
not enough.
You need 13 and 10. Okay. Another strange din. If all 23 say guilty, he doesn't get killed.
He didn't get a fair trial.
Because the Torah says when you judge him, you have to be able to find merit. If there's nobody that can find any merit for the guy, something's wrong with the system. The guy doesn't get killed.
And if he actually got killed and he was innocent,
then he was supposed to die anyway.
And then in monetary cases, if the Beit Din make a mistake, the Beit Din has to pay. Except
sometimes Beis Din has to pay from their own pocket.
Interesting.
So the court system is really different in a lot of major issues than it is in...
So there's no jail. That means that if the guy did, like, let's say he stole something, there's no jail. You got to pay something.
Right.
Or that's it.
There's a printed sikha from the Rebbe. The Rebbe explained The Rebbe believed in rehabilitation rather than jail term. And the Rebbe explained like this, it's late, but in a very brief nutshell, a person was born on the world to accomplish a mission. Sometimes a person did such a terrible crime that they forfeited the right to complete the mission in world, and therefore Bezdin kills them. To put a guy in jail where he cannot function in society, where he cannot function to fulfill the mission that he was given to in life, is destroying something God created. God created a person with a mission. You either let him fulfill his mission, but to have a guy alive and not be able to fulfill his mission, that's against everything Hashem wants. So according to Torah, you rehabilitate the guy to get him back into society in a normal way. Now, Halacha says, what happens if there was a nutcase that went around killing people and there was no way of proving it? So then Bezdin, if they knew the guy did it, they would lock him up in a room just to save the world. I mean, or something that doesn't, then it would reverse, the Gemara says. The Gemara says, what happens if there was Nebuch, a girl that was crazy? Okay? And all the men were taking advantage of her. So to protect the girl, they would lock her up. But not as a punishment of a jail term that your sentence is 10 years, 25 years, life. I mean, there's no such thing because you're not allowing the person to do what they're supposed to be doing.